Good Friday morning, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I'm Chase McCabe. She's Michelle Knezvik, the reporter, Nick Kieser on the ones and twos. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. It is Friday. We made it. I had that moment this morning where I woke up and I'm like, you know, just kind of like coming to, and I thought it was Thursday.
I have been all over the place this week. I thought Thursday was Tuesday on air. I said happy Tuesday. It was Monday. I mean, I am all over the place. But yes, today is Friday, everyone. So
yeah.
TGIF, Friday. We are very close to the weekend.
Yeah, I'm pumped about it. Got a lot of sports to watch for sure that we will get to. We'll talk to Scott Nickel, of course, former Predator. He's assistant GM now. He's also the GM of the Milwaukee Admirals as they continue their playoffs tonight with a lot of guys that you saw up here in Nashville this year, whether it's Luke Evangelista, Phil Tomasino, Kiefer Sherwood, just to name a few, Igor Afanasyev. They are all on the Admirals competing. You'll actually be able to hear that game tonight starting at 7. So should be a lot of fun. But continuing our discussion on the Titans, I thought about this. So look, just to peel back the curtain, and none of you care, but I'm just going to say this for a second. You know, we're now at the time of year where it's like, okay, we want to talk about the Titans, but we're gonna just talk about Will Levis probably until we finally see him on the field, which, mm-hmm. You know, we'll see him for rookie camp, so that'll be good. But when we see him in a preseason game, it'll be like, yay, we got something to talk about. But I got to give, you know, Rex Rowe credit. He wrote a great article about him. This is what it's going to be because there's just the giant question mark of, yes, Ryan Tannehill is going to start game one, but, you know, what if things go awry? What if, you know, after at the bye, and the schedule did come out last night, we'll give you that in just a second, and kudos to Titans social media because they did a pretty good job with it. It was funny how they did all that. But, you know, that's going to continue to come up. And so I think it's a fascinating discussion because, like, I don't remember it being this involved with Malik Willis just because I think we all knew he was going to be a project and he was a third-round pick.
Well, and after that year in 2021, people were so out on Ryan Tannehill just based off of how that season had ended. So then when you take the flyer on Malik Willis in the third round and there was some smoke just surrounding him, there were some highlight videos from a pro day. He's got a big arm, his athletic ability, right? You can't disregard any of that. So there was some excitement heading into camp. But I agree, you know, people were ready to turn the page. And then, of course, 2 years in a row, you draft a quarterback. But now this narrative is completely different. And fans are already out on Malik Willis based off of the little time he showed starting this year when Ryan Tannehill got hurt. And then you actually get a guy who was viewed as a true first-round talent, falls to the second round, you get him, and now people aren't happy. I can't keep up. But the conversation, right. I mean, surrounding the two is so incredibly different. And now, of course, we're going to talk about him because it's the quarterback position and it's what everybody wants to know, because when you find somebody who can be your franchise guy, which we don't know yet, we don't know, you know, for either of them, it is a game changer. And we've seen it consistently happen, especially with teams in the AFC. But I just feel like people, just the narrative surrounding him is honestly wild to me. Like, I expected people to be maybe frustrated because you and I have talked about he probably was one of the most polarizing players in this year's draft, him and Anthony Richardson, I would say. But wow, I mean, people have just, they're already ready. I mean, he could be amazing and people are already ready to have him off the team.
Well, I mean, look, I respect fans. I've been a crazy fan myself. I'm sure you have. Fans are fickle. That's just what they are. You know, the first game he plays that's meaningful and he goes down and he throws three touchdowns and they win, they're going to anoint him MVP. That's how it goes. That's what it is. It's all recency bias. It's, you know, last year Kentucky wasn't very good, and so therefore they think he's the worst quarterback in the world. And, you know, there's probably also the mix of the orange Kool-Aid that's floating around too.
So
that might have to do, you know, I drink the black and gold, so, you know, it's okay. It's not as bad. And, you know, my team.
Yeah, but I don't get it because you also root for Tennessee.
No, I don't.
Yes, you, Chase. Literally, you said you're rooting for Tennessee this year.
Yeah, but you go back and listen to the context in which I said it.
You have to. I've had a conversation with you, and I'm like, you like Vanderbilt and Tennessee, and you're like, yeah.
No, I say I root for Tennessee because, one, I don't hate Tennessee, for instance, but it's good for us. It's good for what we talk about. That's what I always say. I grew up Vanderbilt.
I
root against Tennessee when they play Vanderbilt.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, go back and listen. It's all about context. People want to make what they want to make. That's fine. But it's all about context.
Well, but we've had this conversation. But
I know. I say I don't hate Tennessee. I don't. But I'm not like, go Vols. I'm not Robbie. Robbie is a Tennessee fan. I'm not like that. I'm just like, hey, I don't, as long as they're not playing Vanderbilt, I don't care. But it's good for us.
Okay.
That's how I am. Fair. And I grew up watching some guy named Peyton. Is Robbie back there?
No, he's not. Some guy named Peyton.
So the Titans schedule, the NFL schedule did come out. Titans will open the season at New Orleans on September 10th. So they will open their season at the Superdome, which I think, look, that game right there, I think is winnable. But I think there's extra pressure on Derek Carr to show out with his new team at home. You know he's going to want that win. So I think that's an interesting way to start the season.
I agree. I mean, you're going to, first off, an intense environment down there. Saints are everything in New Orleans. Derek Carr has something to prove. I mean, last year, the way he was treated by the Raiders and them essentially being off on him towards the end of the season, he didn't play the last couple of games, and them essentially being done with him, I think, too early, and going and signing a guy like Jimmy G. Derek Carr definitely has something to prove. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's a part of a new organization. He, of course, wants to have a comeback season, and it's lining up for him to be. I think a lot of the Saints' success this year will depend on how Alvin Kamara is. What does his health look like? But also Derek Carr. I mean, he's going to be a huge part of it, starting quarterback day one. And the way I look at this schedule, and when I saw it, I said, oh, okay. I mean, I could see them, like, this is a winnable schedule. I mean, I remember when we were talking about it yesterday and seeing the opponents that they had, I said I could see this team being a little bit over 500, a 500 team. But there's a lot of, yeah, I think they could win that game because there is a lot of unknown. Like, yeah, I think they could beat the Saints, but I also could see that game being a loss. Or, yeah, I think that they could win both games against the Colts, but I don't know. Or,
I mean, time's going to tell.
Yeah. You know, we can look at it and think, oh, they're going to win this amount of games. And I remember in the 2021 season, there was that stretch of Bills, Rams, Chiefs. And we were talking, okay, if they can just get maybe three of them, that would be great. And that was right when Derrick Henry hurt his foot and they ended up winning that entire stretch of games. So, you know, we can say all of this, but it does look like a winnable schedule for this team, especially if Ryan Tannehill is your starting quarterback all year long.
By the way, Nick on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, called me a front runner. I am not a front runner. I've cheered for Vanderbilt my whole life. That is definitely not a front runner. And the Dallas Cowboys haven't won anything since the 90s. So I would not call myself a front runner. And the Braves.
I've honestly never heard that team or that term.
No, a front runner is like you pick, basically you somebody that came out and said like, oh, I'm a Patriots fan, you know,
in what 04 or whatever.
Yeah, and then I'm a Red Sox fan and like all that, you know, the ones that just started winning. I mean, I was a Braves fan since I knew what baseball was. And see, like I always get crap for that because they're like, oh yeah, cause team of the 90s. I'm like, do you think I really knew that when I became a fan at 4 years old?
Well, I think sometimes that actually happens with little kids, right?
You
like a team when you're younger, and then that's your team, but you keep it. And it's not like the Braves. I mean, obviously, these last couple of years, they've been very successful. Sure. But in the middle of your high schoolness and things like that, I mean, they weren't that successful.
But like when the Braves won the World Series 2 years ago, I considered that to be like, honestly, my first moment in my life where my team, where I got to enjoy my team winning a championship. Even though I was alive in 95, I barely remember that.
Yeah, you were young.
I was alive, you know, in 95 when the Cowboys won their last World Series, Super Bowl. I barely remember that. So to me, like I had seen, you know, obviously I remember the Titans Super Bowl run where they lost. I remember the Stanley Cup final where they lost. But I hadn't gotten to truly experience that as a fan until 2 years ago when the Braves won the World Series. So but I mean, I get it. It's an easy argument because in the 90s, that both franchises were so good. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's when I was born in 87. So, like, 92, 93 is when I started understanding what sports was, and I became a fan. I became a fan of the Cowboys because my great uncle lived in Texas. He was a Cowboys fan. There was no team here. Mm-hmm. The Braves were the closest baseball team. So, and I like Chipper. I mean, Chipper Jones is the reason I became a Braves fan.
I bet you that's more common than you think. Like little kids growing up, yeah. Whether it be watching baseball, football, whatever it is, you see a successful team, and then usually you carry it with you. I mean, that was me with the Red Sox. I'm from New York.
Greg A. is defending my honor, though. He says, Michelle Chase is telling you the truth about his fandom for Vanderbilt and Tennessee. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
See, fandom for Vanderbilt and Tennessee.
No, I'm not a Tennessee fan. Vandy.
I knew you were a Vandy fan.
Yeah. Go Doors.
Did you almost just say go Vols? I heard a little go Doors.
I've been an Oiler Titans fan since 1962.
Is that a texter?
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. You're an OG. That's amazing.
That is an OG. I mean, I think the franchise was founded in 60.
So you have gone through absolutely. So I feel like this fan would have a really good perspective on, you know, the success that the team has recently had and now kind of turning the page. But, you know, you've seen it in the dog days. You've seen it up and down.
I'm curious of this because it's like I have a lot of family in Texas, in you know, the Houston surrounding areas. I know a few people from there that hate the Titans now because they left. And so I am curious of a fan that's like been a fan of the franchise since the beginning and even followed him here. I feel like that's pretty rare because most of them, like I know I was talking to somebody in particular that grew up an Oilers fan, had his heart ripped out when they came here, and then he became a Texans fan, and now he absolutely hates the Titans.
Well, when John McClain came on, this would have been in the offseason before the draft, we mentioned they're trying to bring the Oilers jerseys back and if they would wear them when they play Houston in Houston. And he did not like that. And he was like, fans will be mad. There is a lot of ill will in Houston of people who started off as Oilers fans. And of course it leaves. I mean, I don't really know. I guess we could ask Caroline Fenton this, but what is it like with the Rams and going to Los Angeles and things like that? I mean, that happened differently, though, that whole situation. But, I mean, I get it, right? If you root for a team for so long and you have the luxury of being able to go to their games and stuff, and then they move states, it's like,
yeah,
what the heck?
I love that. This has gotten people talking. I love this. Like, one texter says, I was born in 87, too, and I'm a Titans fan. They weren't here when I was born. That's fine. Look, I'm a Titans fan, too. I'm using my American right to choose and claiming both, and I've said this many times on the air, and I've gotten a lot of crap for it, but I don't care. I do what I want. So I'm a man. I'm 36.
Somebody said, been an Oilers fan, hated the Cowboys.
Yeah, I know. 615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in on our off-the-rails topic that we just went down. We'll also get to your phones. Coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Friday morning, off the rails. I mean, I don't really know how we got on this. I mean, I guess because Chase is a fan of multiple teams in the same sport, and that's illegal. I don't, even though I think some people are cool with it, but
I think college athletics, the fandom, especially in whether it be SEC teams, Big Ten teams, like that fandom is so intense, especially football, basketball. And I think that also kind of rolls us into the conversation, though, on why people feel so passionate one way or another about Will Levis. Because we live in Tennessee volunteer country. He went to Kentucky. We've talked about, you know, his his intenseness on the field of if he's on your team, you love him, but if you're playing against him, you hate him. It's similar to, I mean, like the way Tom Brady would act kind of in the like, oh, watch this, or just like the command that you kind of take on the field, the mentality and things like that. And I honestly think that's kind of how we ended up where we are right now. And also, we need to plug our very own Joe Rexroad, who wrote an absolutely incredible article on Will Levis. I read the entire thing this morning. Just some really good perspective, and the amount of connections that Will Levis has to this team in one way or another, it's pretty incredible. His story, how he got here, and all of the twists and the turns, and how him and Peter Skoronski are connected.
Yeah, definitely check that out on The Athletic. 615-737-1025. Okay, Ricky's going to tweet a video in a second that is going to get me in even more trouble. So now I have to explain what it is.
Oh, is it you cheering when the Vols beat Alabama?
No, it's me. It's me singing Rocky Top with the band at Tennessee when they beat Kentucky 24-7.
I don't even remember.
Okay,
that
so
year.
Let me tell you I'll tell you the backstory on this. So I was producing the morning show at the time, which was Braden Gall, D Mace, and Nick Kale. And I said, yeah, I'm going to Knoxville for the weekend, Tennessee Kentucky game, going with some friends. And I was with a graduate of UT, diehard Vols fan. And they basically were like, we need a good video of Chase having fun, basically insinuating like having a few adult beverages and. Because you could buy them at the state. That was like the first year you could get beer at the stadium and all
got
that.
It.
And so Kentucky never got off the bus. I mean, like that was a year where Kentucky was like Stoops was starting to bring them on. They were getting really good. I think you were still in school probably.
I would have been a sophomore.
Yeah. And Tennessee just beat the rails off of them. I mean, it was never a game. And so we were right behind the band and I was like, I'll go down with the band. And so I went and got basically in with the band, and I'm just like leading everybody on in Rocky Top.
It is a good song. It does have funny. A nice tune to it.
And
not
so we
lie.
Played it on the air and everything, had fun with it. 615-737-1025. A lot of you want to weigh in on this topic about fandom and thing like that. Let's see. Eric, fan for multiple teams. Eric, what's up?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? So I'm kind of torn here because I get ragged quite a bit. I was born in Michigan, so I've always been diehard Go Blue. That being said, I also lived in West Virginia for 6 years, so I love me some football in Morgantown. Lived in Atlanta for 13 years, so I'm diehard Braves. Got to love my rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. And then I've been here for the last, since 2009, right before the boom. And I always go for the underdog when I don't have a team of loyalty. So I've always been a Vandy fan here. So I'm screwed.
Well, hey, you know what? I'm right there with you, man. It's okay.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call. I like his point, though. Whenever I don't have a dog in the fight, I'm always an underdog fan.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, okay, when I watch a game, let's say I'm watching on a Saturday night, I'm watching LSU and Alabama, okay? I hate Alabama, so I am never going to cheer for Alabama. Now, I respect the hell out of Nick Saban, but, like, I grew up not liking Alabama. So I tend to in LSU, like, I don't have a feeling either way really towards LSU.
Yeah.
You know? And so
– we do like Caroline Fenton, though.
Right. And my mom was born in Baton Rouge, so, I mean, there's always kind of been a little bit of that, but mm-hmm. – I will find myself not necessarily cheering, but it's like I want to pick a side, and so I tend to pick that way. But if I'm watching, you know, Virginia Tech, Virginia, I don't care. Like, I'm just like, okay, as long as it's a good game, you know. It's weird. It's weird how that works.
Or I think one of the best probably comparison to this, Chase, is that Alabama Texas game. Earlier this year, one of the first games of college football, and of course people are going to root for Alabama to lose because they've always been so successful, and then to see such a close game for Texas, but who actually likes Texas? I mean, who doesn't just do horns down for fun? if you didn't go to Texas or you're not from there or something. So I feel like that was a game. And then just the way it all planned out when it like came down to the kick and everything like that. I kind of was laughing when Alabama won because then everybody was like, ooh.
So last year I went, and we'll get to more of your calls in just a second. Last year I went up to Chicago to see Ryan Porth. And we did White Sox one day and we did Cubs the next. And we were talking, we were just kind of talking about the sports landscape in Chicago because, you know, he had been there about 6 months and he's like, yeah, it's really interesting. He goes, if you lived here, you would totally be a Sox fan. And I'm like, oh, I think so. Absolutely. I would be because I tend to like, why I'm a Vandy fan, 95% are Vols. And so I like the little guy. I like the underdog. And I always, you know, lean that way. Like Duke UNC, I'd be Duke. You know, like that would probably be
is
where
Duke
I would go.
Is Duke the underdog, though?
Smaller school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That one's a hard one. That's a bad example. New York, for instance. If I'd grown up in New York, I probably would have been
Mets,
Nets, Jets, and Islanders.
That's fair.
Whereas a lot of
it's Yankees, Giants, Rangers, Knicks.
Yeah, so I probably would have leaned that way. I mean, like being the Cowboy fan that I am, I sure as hell wouldn't cheer for the Giants.
So to your point, I live with Ryan from Chicago, and he is from obviously Chicago, born and raised there. And I actually kind of compare it to Nashville with the two sports teams. So in Chicago, the way people view it, like if you're a Sox fan, you are a, like born and raised Chicagoan. You're not from the suburbs. You're literally from your zip code. It has a Chicago address on it. And it's turned into everybody moving to the city of Chicago being a Cubs fan. Or, oh, you're from the suburbs. You're a Cubs fan. That's kind of the how people view it. And then I kind of look at Nashville and I think, if you're born and raised in Nashville, you probably grew up going to Vandy games, basketball, like you. But then so many people moving here are like, ooh, like I know so many people have moved here and they're like, yeah, I chose the Vols because they're such a fun SEC school to root for.
Right.
So it's kind of a similar context for both of them. Like the bigger school, the big dog, they win. They have a huge fan base.
Right. And there was a Rex Road. All right, real quick, let's squeeze in a couple of calls before we get to Scott Nickel. Kenny, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. We got you.
Are you there?
Yep, we got you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, so I was going to tell you, don't discount the player aspect. I'm a person that grew up liking a player, and that led to my fandom of that team. I grew up in New York. I attached to Don Mattingly. That was it. I was a Yankees fan. When New York teams in football were not very good in the 70s and the mid-70s, I picked a football player, Earl Campbell, and I said, whoever drafts him, that's going to be my team. And it was the Oilers. And here I am, still a Titan fan all these years later. And so sometimes someone will attach to a player, and that's what leads to their fandom, kind of like yourself and Chipper Jones.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent point, Kenny. Thanks for the call. Don Mattingly, former Sound as well.
Love that point. That's also why I absolutely hated Johnny Damon when he played for the Red Sox, then he went and played for the Yankees.
Nick, what's up?
Hey, Nick.
Hey, Chase. I knew that front runner comment might get it going, but
it created a segment.
Real quick. I'm kind of like you, man. Where I was born in Pittsburgh, so I'm a Steeler, Pirates, Penguins fan.
Yes.
And then live in Nashville now. So, like, obviously I'll cheer for the Titans if they're not playing the Steelers, and I go to Preds games and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Minneapolis for a while, so I cheer for the – I like the Timberwolves. But, no, I'm with you. If on your underdog comment, too, I agree with you there. I lived in Chicago for about 3 years, and I kind of found myself, like, to go for the White Sox because I was like, yeah, everybody that moves to Chicago is a Cubs fan. I kind of want to be, like, with the boys, right, or, like,
yes,
the people that love the – I just thought that would get the – I'm glad that comment kind of got the conversation going.
It did.
So thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks for it, Nick. Appreciate it,
thanks,
man.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for a second,
yeah,
too.
That was awesome. Very, very good stuff here on a Friday. We're all feisty now. But coming up next, we'll talk to Scotty Nichol, of course, assistant GM of the Predators. He's over the Milwaukee Admirals. They'll be in action tonight in the second round of the playoffs. We'll talk to him next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock on these airwaves, the AHL affiliate of the Nashville Predators, the Milwaukee Admirals, open up the second round against the Texas Stars. Of course, they are the affiliate of the Dallas Stars. And you can hear Game 1 starting at 7. You can hear Game 2 tomorrow night at 6 here on 102.5 The Game. We say hello now to the general manager of the Milwaukee Admirals, also assistant GM up here with Nashville. Scott Nichol is on the line with us. Scooter, how are you?
Hey, Scott.
Good. Yeah, hi guys. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, doing fantastic. This has to be exciting. Even though, you know, the Predators aren't in the playoffs, you get to see some of these guys that we saw in the second half of the season up here in Nashville compete for the Calder Cup or the Calder Trophy in the Calder Cup playoffs. I know that has to be exciting for you.
Yeah, it's a little bit bittersweet. You always want your NHL team to go far and do well, but at the other flip of the coin, you like to see these guys at least play some, and they did. They played some meaningful games for sure down the stretch, but now it's time for them to come and play some meaningful games here. Like, you look at our last game against Manitoba, series clinching game, score with 26 seconds left. Like, it's good for the younger players, even for some of the bubble guys, to, you know, have a little bit more of a role and be a huge part of this team going forward.
I know we're going to talk about a lot of specific players, but I want to get your take on what it's kind of been like going through this transition. You obviously played for Barry Trotz when he was the head coach here, and now he's taking over as the general manager. You've worked with David for many, many years. So what's it been like from your point of view of being able to go through this transition, albeit working with someone you're quite familiar with?
Yeah, it's been good. I think it's helped a lot just that when Trotz came in at that time, just because, you know, like I said before, our young guys have, instead of Barry coming down here and taking a look at some of our prospects and what we have in the cupboards, and he got to see a lot of those guys in those situations up in the NHL. So I think that really helped him kind of look at our depth of our organization. I think we have a, you know, fantastic depth of our organization, especially at the forward position. And it's been as seamless, I guess, as you can say. He's been in lots of meetings. I think David's getting up to speed on everything, and he's been bouncing around between Milwaukee and Nashville, and it's been good. It's good to see Barry. I get to work with him. I played for him for 4 years, and he's just a quality person. He's a great hockey mind. He's been in the business for a long time, not at the general manager side of things, but as a head coach, and he has a good grasp for talent and what you need to kind of build a winning culture and a winning hockey team.
We're talking to Scott Nichol, GM of the Milwaukee Admirals, assistant GM with the Nashville Predators as well. We got to see a slight glimpse of Askarov this year in goal when he came up for the Preds, but obviously he's had a nice year with Milwaukee. What have you seen change with him from the beginning of the season up until this point as he continues his development?
Well, he likes to play the puck, and sometimes that's a good thing and bad thing. He's pretty he keeps you on the toes, but no, he's worked really. It's just such a different culture coming from the KHL. He didn't play a whole lot of games last year, so we knew he was an elite talent. We tried to just manage his workload a little bit this year, and then with his partner Devin Cooley, I think they've really read off each other very well. I think he's calmed down. He's a little bit more mature, just getting used to the size of the rink and how we go about things here, just the practice days that we have, how to kind of manage his time on the optionals. And he's been really good. He's a great personality. He works extremely hard, and, you know, the teammates really endear him, and he's been really good for us. And these are the types of games. Like, he's a young player. He goes to game five. Probably his best game of the series was game five. And those are all really good growth moments for, you know, a young goalie who's, you know, a starter in this league and going through the playoff run.
Scott Nichol joins us right now. Scott, What has it been like from your seat, you know, watching some of the guys like Luke Evangelista, Tomasino, be playing really meaningful hockey towards the postseason with the Preds, you know, and being significant role players? And then, you know, after their season ended, back in Milwaukee and doing the same thing and getting the reps of just playing really meaningful playoff postseason hockey?
Yeah, I think we could go through the whole list. Like, we've had a lot of – we basically almost have had two different teams down here in Milwaukee. It's just, you know, with all the call-ups and the injuries up top, and it's been really good for Luke Evangelista. And it was a really good growing experience for Phil Tomasino. He played in the NHL all year last year, came here at the beginning of the year. He kind of had a little bit of a stumble and a hiccup, and it's really hard to come from the NHL to the American League. And, you know, it took him a little while to get his game going. And then when he was ready, he got called back up. And I think you guys could see his game matured a lot up there. He played with a lot more pace. And then the good thing with a lot of these guys is that they've been vested in Milwaukee at some point of the year. Like, I go through Kiefer Sherwood to Jankowski to McCarron to, you know, Igor Afanasyev, even Stastny. Like, I could go through the whole list of them. You know, it's been really good for them to get a little bit of a taste to see where they're at. And then in some of the games, it really exposed some of their, you know, their deficiencies. The game against Winnipeg or the game against the New York Rangers, like, that was a kind of a wow moment for, I think, some of these young guys are saying, okay, this is the National Hockey League. It's a pretty good league. So it's been a little bit of a roller coaster year for some of the guys, just with getting bounced up and down. But I think in the end, it's been very good for their, you know, their confidence, and just to see where their holes in their games are and what they have to improve on. If it's on the ice, if it's in the gym, get stronger, get faster. So it's been rewarding. And now we just got to, you know, just keep going down here.
Scott, along those lines of, you know, we saw so many prospects come up, you know, to Nashville. And that means that somebody's got to take their spot in Milwaukee. And the Admirals were able to continue their push to the postseason, obviously make the postseason. What are the conversations like? How difficult are they when you send those guys back down? And obviously they get their spot back, but that also means that not everybody can play. So what are those interactions like from your point of view?
Well, you just be upfront honest with all our guys. And, you know, it's, you know, I think our leadership has been fantastic here with Cole Schneider as our captain, and even Timmy Schaller. Like, he's our assistant captain, and he hasn't been in the lineup in the first round. And so it's just being honest with them and just kind of seeing the big picture. And we're gonna need everybody going forward. And I think our coaching staff has done a very nice job of balancing the roster and trying to keep everybody involved and engaged. We've done a ton of off-ice stuff, team building stuff. And I think just going through the first round and going to a game five series, and that really, I think, galvanized our group, just going through a little adversity. And so I think hopefully that'll, you know, help us going forward into this next round. It's going to be it'll be a tough round. They're a really good team. But I think at the end of the day, they work hard for each other. They care about each other. And that's sometimes at this stage of the, you know, season, it's all about, you know, working for each other, having a good culture, and enjoy coming to the rink.
Predator Scott Nickel joins us. To that point, Scott, you know, you talked about having to bring other guys up when some of the players were here in Nashville. Joachim Kamel, who was the Predators' first-round pick last year, was a guy who got brought up and has had some major production for you all in the last couple of weeks. What can you just say about his growth in the time that he's been with you all in Milwaukee?
He's been fantastic. He's a 2004 birth year. Like, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what you're going to get from him. He played over in Finland. It's almost, I kind of clump him in with Parson. And like, when they play over in Finland, it's a very structured game. It's not a whole lot of offense. It's more defense. And I think he's enjoyed being here and being around the puck. He's got a lot more bite, and he's a lot more physical than I thought. Like, he's a pure shooter. He's got good skill, but he works hard, and he's not scared to, you know, take the body, be first on puck. So for a young kid coming in at three quarters of the way through the season, he's been really good for us. And I've been, you know, he's been in our, other than the suspension, and then he's been a huge part of our, our group. So very happy with him. He's good personality, and he fits right in with our team.
Talking to Scott Nickel, assistant GM of the Predators, GM of the Milwaukee Admirals. Carl Taylor is a name that I think people are going to get to know around the National Hockey League sooner rather than later. You've gotten to work with him, you know, side by side over the course of the last several years. What can you say about how he has developed as a head coach?
Yeah, he's done. Their whole staff has done a fantastic job. The American League is hard to coach because you don't have the same roster from night to night. It seems like, and now this is another challenge for him because we have a lot of extra guys. We have, you know, Radcliffe, Leonard. We have a lot of depth, and now it's starting to balance the lineup. And but they have done a very nice job. I think our special teams have been fantastic. Got four runs our penalty kill. I think we're like third in the American League. Greg Rallo and Carl Taylor run our power play. They were first in the American League. So they've done a really nice job. Lots of communication, lots of patience. And then this league, you can do that. We play 72 games, so it's almost turning into a weekend league. So you can do your practices and do your skill work during the week. Our player development guys come in and help out. Just a very open and open dressing room in the coach's office that they like to help. They want to, you know, take all the resources that we have and apply it to the players. So they've done a very nice job this year.
Well, Scott, best of luck tonight and with the series. We're excited to be able to air that here in Nashville for Preds fans to hear the Preds of tomorrow and the Milwaukee Admirals go after the championship in the American League. But really appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Have a good one. Scott Nickel joining us. Was a fun player and now has made his next career, and I believe can be a GM in the National Hockey League here one of these days. As well, and you can hear Admirals and Stars tonight starting at 7, tomorrow starting at 6. We will have those games for you, most of them on 102.5 The Game. Some might have to be on 94.9 The Fan, but bringing you the Calder Cup playoffs for the American Hockey League, and really glad that we can do that. Coming up next, there was an omission, a big omission when it comes to finalists for a certain award. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm a little ticked off about it. We will discuss that coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Hey, be sure to join us, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Gary Force Acura, benefiting Souls for Souls on June 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. This is a really cool event. We started it last year. You can still put a team together, come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebs. We got a great list that we're building right now. And you can support a great cause, and we have a lot of fun. Last year was so much fun. Michelle was posted up at one of the holes hanging out.
Got a little sunburn.
Got a little sun.
And Joe Rexroad and Junie Riddle stole my golf cart.
Yeah, that's not good. We can't have that. You'll have a chance to win some awesome prizes. Sign up to play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenashville.com/golf. Can't believe that is less than a month away, but really looking forward to it. Hope Hope the weather is better than it is today, but really looking forward to that event. So I got to tell you, I'm disappointed. I am disappointed in the general managers of the National Hockey League because UC Soros is not a finalist for the Vezina Trophy, and I just – you can call this bias or whatever. I don't care. Looking at the numbers, looking at the eye tests, he should have been a finalist. I didn't think he was going to win it.
No.
I think Ullmark's going to win it.
Yeah.
But he should have been a finalist.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only reason that the Nashville Predators were in the situation they were with two games left on their schedule this season was a huge thing to deal with UC Soros. And, you know, you give Kevin Lankinen some credit, too, for, you know, being able to step in and have some efficient games when they were, you know, managing UC Soros, just like his game management, load management, right? But the reason they were in this position is because of UC Soros. Am I surprised? Not really, because I think so much of it has to do with if a team is winning and people didn't – I don't think it should, I don't think it should have to do with that, because I think UC Saros was quite literally the main reason that the Predators were in the position they were in towards 100%. The end of the year. But do I think that people look at Boston and see the numbers and see what they did this year? Yep. I mean, I'm not saying he's not deserving of it, but I think that that definitely hurt UC Saros in this Vezina conversation.
Justin and Greenbrier, words are hard today. Justin and Greenbrier texts in on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nick Kieser, pay attention. He says, Chase, I read Nick Kieser's article, The Reporter. And where can we get that article?
You can go look at my work at NashvilleHockeyNow.com.
Okay. And soon on the game Nashville.com, right?
I would assume so, Chaser.
Chase, I read Nick Kieser's article this morning, and it got me so fired up. I know UC was taking the high road about it, but he was snubbed, period. They totally screwed him out of that award, and for what? He was the reason we even won most of the games we did because of how many close games the Predators had. It was disrespectful for the GMs in the NHL to overlook this man. That is Justin and Greenbrier, and 100%. You were just saying that. I think that is spot on. And like, I thought it might be different because the GMs vote on it. And here's the other thing that I thought might happen. I thought there might be, and this is not necessarily right, but I thought there might be like, hey, let's do David a solid. He's retiring. Not necessarily for him to win, but just for Saros to be a finalist.
I don't think so.
No,
I
thought it could have happened.
I get it, but also like UC doesn't want to be there if that's the reasoning. If that's the reasoning, GMs are saying, "Oh, well, we'll play that into it," and that's what. No. He should have been a finalist because of his play, and maybe GMs looked at it like the Preds didn't make the playoffs, so you can't truly judge some of those things. And Nate says, Saros had no chance of being a finalist. They didn't make the playoffs, which is a big deal in an award voting, and the GMs don't give the Vezina enough attention than they
Nate,
should.
Nate, I'm disappointed. You're like Captain Pred. What are we doing here? I mean, usually you're so positive.
I feel like that is like a defeated text. Like he's just
It is
annoyed.
A defeated text. I mean, he's probably not wrong, but I mean, it is like I
like,
hate
who would you
that
have
way.
Who would you have put UC in over?
That's a good question.
Probably Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, Hellebuck. I think he should have been. You could have made the argument for him being the third finalist. Like I said, Ullmark's going to win, but I think he should have been top three. I'd love to know where he is. Is that anywhere, Nick?
Yeah, that would be interesting to find out.
What?
What was that, Chaser?
Where do you know? Is there a ranking somewhere? Like, was he fourth?
So, no. When I was looking that up yesterday, I mean, I just went back to his stats, henceforth why I wrote that. But, no, they have not released who is behind those three. I'm sure if we asked Elliot, he may know. But we typically don't know till closer to the award ceremony.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be curious of where he falls in line in all of that. But, nonetheless, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it's hard too, because as much as we can make a, I'm just looking at him and Hellebuck's stats side by side, but I have to keep flipping pages. I think that's always something worth bringing up too. As much as we can say and cover the Preds every single game, talk about it and know how much he meant to this team and what his stats were, I also think too, the question has to be posed as who would you put him in over, right?
Yeah. Right, and that's a very fair question. But he's not a finalist. We'll find out where he is closer to the awards.
But if he is not even in the top four, top five, I mean, that's an issue. Yeah. That is like the Hendon Hooker Heisman conversation, too, of, at one point he was the best quarterback in college football, and when it comes to voting, all this stuff is blah.
So one important stat before we go to break, just so our listeners understand why it's so monumental.
Educate us.
Is because there was an important stat that stood out to me throughout the season where there was an expected goals against.
Yeah.
And so he's top in the NHL. Like, they should have allowed, I don't remember how many it was per game, but it was over 214 goals over the whole season.
So
he saved.
Here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping like 2 or 3 years from now, I can call up David Poile and say, can you can you like give me the inside scoop on how some of this stuff works? He's going to say no, but I would like, and this would be a question, like when you vote for the Vezina, like do you look at analytics or do you just simply look at like that, go with the eye test? And David would be the perfect person to ask that to because, you know, David has been a GM a long time. And so I think that there are, you know, more of the new school GMs probably yeah. rely more on analytics and the old school GMs are relying more on the eye test. So I'd be very interested. But David always references some of the analytics.
Yeah, I think there, it's that line between the analytics matter, but they shouldn't be everything. And eye test matters, but it shouldn't
sure.
be everything.
Carolina defeats New Jersey 3-2 in overtime. That was a fun game. They win the series 4-1, so they will advance. They await the winner of Florida-Toronto, which that series could end tonight if Florida wins. Mm-hmm. And Dallas defeats Seattle last night 5-2. They take a 3-2 series lead. Seattle will need to win to force Game 7. And then you got Game 5 tonight between Vegas and Edmonton, a very important one in that series in Las Vegas. Coming up next, we will dive back into the Titans schedule, plus a hat tip to the social media team for the Titans. We got to play a little bit of this.
Shout
coming
out
up
Nate
next.
Bain.
Nate Bain and company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.